Hello?
Hi, and welcome. This is Dave. How are you doing?
Great, Dave. How are you doing?
Doing great, Chris. What's going on?
Well, other than I humiliated myself by totally missing the mastermind call by having the wrong time down, everything else is going great.
Okay. All right. Well, super. Good. My IT guy is a little under the weather. He usually has the posting by the next day, so I'll send that around when I have it because we did record it.
Everything you had out was, it said at 1 o'clock Eastern time when I put it in my phone, you know, for my calendar. I just catch it at the time, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how's everything going for you overall?
Oh, it's, I mean, we've just been hugely, hugely busy, which is typical for my industry as we get toward the end of the year, which is, you know, another reason I'm reminded that this is a young man's game and I need to stop playing it. And get into coaching.
Okay.
I'm anxious to get this transition over.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're having massive success at what you're doing now, and you're going to go out with a bang.
Well, that's actually, I do feel quite confident of that. Yeah, we're
that's
having
great.
A look, and we're laying up for some good things to close next year, so it'll make the transition a lot easier.
Super. That's great. Who else? Wins progress notes.
Are you not the only ones on?
No, I know there's somebody else on, but she's lurking.
Am I the only one? This is Kat.
Yeah, Kat. How are you?
We know I'm having my coffee because I just got up, so I'm not quite there yet. But
and
I do want to say...
You get up at the crack of noon, right?
I get up at the crack of 3:45 my time.
I see.
Which
I
is...
See. Do you work all night?
Actually, I do everything that I do at night.
I see.
When my husband's sleeping,
uh-huh.
So I get up, I take care of him, and then I do what I do overnight.
Yeah.
And yeah, but at this hour of the day, I'm just really not quite alert. But I would like to say congratulations to Chris for his success. We missed you a couple of weeks ago when you were being awarded.
Well, thank you, Kat. I appreciate it. It's been a I was going to say it's been a rather humbling and really rewarding experience of what we put together down here. So it's been fun, but I appreciate you saying that.
How did that ceremony go?
Well, it was outstanding. We had probably 150 people there that came to receive their books, and then we made some comments. It was very well received. We've gotten a lot of comments back on it. It's been the Dallas CEO magazine's written up some stuff on it.
Nice.
It was really well received.
That's great. That's excellent. Just a reminder that we won't meet next week. I sent something around about that. We will meet November the 20th, and then again the 27th, the day before Thanksgiving, we won't meet. And if anybody's ready, I will accept any volunteers to do the roadmap presentation, just maybe a 15-minute at most presentation of your working the roadmap on some storyline or some aspect of either yourself or a case. And the first week that's open is December 4th, and then there are three Wednesdays in December and the first two Wednesdays of January. So we need to get going and have at least a couple in December to have two in January before our last seminar on will be January the 22nd. Anybody want to volunteer for the 4th or the 11th of December?
I don't want to volunteer at this hour.
I'm sorry, say it again.
I said I don't want to volunteer at this hour.
Okay. But
let me think.
You'll need to do it at one time or the other. The date will be your option. Do you prefer like December 4th, 11th, 18th, or January 8th or 15th?
Oh, okay. Actually, I think I would prefer to do it before Christmas.
Okay.
So what date do you have that's closest to Christmas?
Closest, December 18th.
18th?
Yeah. Are you there?
I am. I thought someone else was talking. Actually, I think I'll do the 11th. You have the 11th, right?
Yeah, okay.
I'll commit the 11th.
Dave, I'll take the 18th. Let me check something real quick.
Okay. All right, great.
That is, oh.
Pick another time if it doesn't work.
No, actually, that does work. That works.
Okay.
So December 18th, okay.
Okay, super. We'll devote about 15 minutes to that presentation, and I think just the process of doing it and working it through will be a useful experience, and you can see how much it it's beneficial to you, and whether you do it on a coaching case or yourself, I think it'll be an interesting process. Have either Lynn or Diane arrived?
Diane has.
Diane, welcome. How are you? What's going on?
Good. How are you?
I'm great.
I'm great too. Thanks. Just really busy day.
Okay.
Just arrived. Thanks.
Any wins or progress notes?
I listened in on, I think it was Tuesday, and I thought that was very interesting, and I was processing some of that. And also, I like the idea of how some of the coaches that you have worked with, are adding a different element to it, because I think that's definitely something that I'd like to do, because when you approach things almost, holistically and in a variety of different ways, I think it becomes much more integrative. So I thought that was really interesting, listening to that.
Yeah, it's an outstanding group of coaches. I mean, most of the coaches I have personally invited to do the training, so I know their work and respect it, and it's just a dynamite group of people. So you could do a dartboard of the registry and be assured of a really quality coach. And, and I'll remind you and encourage you to put your names, contact information, pictures, especially on the registry as soon as you're finished. Well, I'm glad you found it beneficial.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything that you'd like to talk about, either from the reading or from any of your work with clients, or anything that's come up that would be helpful for us to discuss? We're going to talk about the last two steps today, step 6 and 7, author new experiences and program new identity. So this will complete the fundamental work on the roadmap steps. So anything that would be helpful for us to discuss before we move into the material? How is it seen? Does it seem clear and specific enough to you to really inform your listening? Now, and that's what I'm interested in. Not that you're going to take this as a template to try to fit somebody into it, or give them the exercise, but just at this point, just to really inform your listening, to put together and synthesize a way of hearing material and processing it that you can really understand someone's story and the construction of it in a better way, and then begin to see how you can help facilitate their revision of their story to be even more effective and successful.
Dave, ask that again. How? Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you finding it helpful to inform your listening?
Sorry.
Of clients? Is it making a difference in terms of how you listen to clients?
Oh, I find it really useful, yet I see such repetitions among what people have to, what they say. Whether it's resistance, or there was two pages actually in one of the readings. And after I read it, I just thought, this is like 95% of the people, of what they, how they spend their time rationalizing why they're not moving ahead. It was almost humorous. I think I'm going to make a copy of it for some people. Yet it's so clear when you read it or when you discuss it, yet it is so camouflaged in such so much of the busyness that a lot of people are doing. So,
well,
yes,
see,
I think
exactly
it really does
you,
articulate it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly where you earn your money, to help someone listen to their own story and to hear and see what they have not been able to discern, what they've done automatically. Because to them, it's not their story. It's just the way things are. And it's not an old story or a new story, but it's reality. So we're listening from a perspective of knowing that whatever someone thinks and feels and experiences is what they construct each moment, so that we can listen from that perspective to see how they're constructing their story, to see, you know, what works and what doesn't. And you know, just the very simplest way of thinking about it is there are five steps to solution focus. One is, if it's not broken, don't fix it. If it works, do more of it. If it isn't working, do something different. Small steps can lead to big steps, or big changes, rather. And then lastly, the solution is not necessarily related to the problem. You know, it was Jung who said, you know, some problems can't be solved, they just have to be outlived. So we don't necessarily get the solution by focusing on the problem, because that's one of the things that we do quite differently in coaching, is to focus on possibilities rather than problems. Because understanding the problem, going back into the problem, understanding all the dynamics and causes and manifestations does not create a solution. In fact, it etches the grooves around that or about that problem in the brain even further, which is, you know, as we've talked before, how some people get stuck in therapy. Going back into an old story and revising the old story and creating a better solution. A thousand better endings later, they've still recreated the process of the old story and etched it even further. So one of the things we do in coaching is to look at now and next, really listening for how someone is creating their own story right now and how we can facilitate a revision or an evolution to a better story. So, yeah, thanks for highlighting that. Yeah, Chris.
I was going to say, one of the things that is really I'm still amazed by is how much emotion, I think I may have taken emotion for granted, that's just part of where someone is, but seeing how much emotion has, and I guess really kind of when you're trying to dissect maybe someone's saying, what percentage of that, of their comment or where they're going, where they feel like they currently are, is based on emotion? That's been interesting.
Yes. What we know now and what neuroscience labs have validated with fMRI studies and some very sophisticated views of things is that we make decisions first on an emotional basis, that any stimuli comes directly to the midbrain, is sorted by the amygdala and passed on to the hippocampus, which assigns meaning. So this is the unconscious, basically. The unconscious is the hippocampus that assigns meaning. And then it's kicked up to the forebrain to make it make sense and be conscious and logical. And you know, Chris, from your business, that people make decisions emotionally and then justify logically. And there are a couple of neuroeconomics labs have shown that people make buy decisions up to 10 seconds before they're even consciously aware of it. So this is part of the experience of mastering influence individually for someone, is for them to know really how they make decisions and to be able to monitor, to regulate that, and keep a balance about that so that it's both emotional and a logic, and not just an emotional decision that we then justify. In fact, some neuroscientists have even said the primary purpose of the forebrain, the left and right forebrain, is to search out and find logical, sensible reasons that make sense of decisions that we've already made at a midbrain level. So that just emphasizes even more exactly what you're saying. Like the people at your garage sale, you know?
I understand.
Yeah.
I think, I have a question, and I think you know the answer yet. I think some of the reticence with discussing possibilities, not problems, is not being able to access the emotion. And, you know, that's where I think that the logical steps are important, yet if someone is young enough or has done something for a certain period of time, if they don't have the period of accessing what they were really passionate about or really interested in, et cetera, that sometimes it's difficult to move forward because that strength or that foundation isn't easy to tap into. And so that's where I, you know, I've done some other reading and I have some other ideas, yet I think process is terrific, but it has to be so you can go and access something that already was activated. You know, that's a little bit of my guess, and that's where I think people have a tendency to do the same thing because maybe they don't have that variety in their background to tap into things that they may be passionate about.
Well, I think that's very true.
I'm curious about,
you tend to, go ahead.
No, so I really enjoy the logical approach, yet I think that sometimes with people that they're just very fearful of making the change or even connecting emotionally with something that they've done in the past to build upon.
I think that's very true, that we tend, our minds play a role because we tend to stay in a comfort zone and to repeat a behavior that we know the outcome, even when it may have a glass ceiling or be something that's limiting, we at least know the outcome, and repetition can masquerade as effectiveness, but because we can predict the outcome, and to try out anything new, it begins a sense of anxiety or uncertainty because you haven't done that before, and our brains contribute because we've grooved pathways to do things that repeat, to do that on an economical and repetitive basis. And the brain grooves pathways and neurons to do things that we repeat. So the brain even resists change. And that's why it's a challenge for someone. And that's especially why it's important to not take it personally as a coach, because someone may be just as frustrated as we feel with them at times, if you really want them to make progress, if you're resonating and feeling that. I think once you understand this process, you won't feel that, and you won't, you'll sense the frustration or the trepidation that someone has and engage in a collaborative way to help them move ahead. But I think it's a very common experience. It's something that every client will experience at some point and perhaps repeatedly, to do things in a different way, to engage in change, to do something that they've never done before. And that's scary. And their detection mechanism says that's not right. So the brain is also resisting. So This is simply a way to think about listening to that and helping someone to understand their own experience and to evolve a new model of that along with their experience of change and to have a strategic and powerful way to engage change. And this is something that we're doing that's as fundamental as changing someone's mind and brain and their core identity, because this involves who and what they see themselves as. This involves the model that they use to engage themselves and the world. So this is fundamentally very powerful because it's changing something as bedrock as their identity. We're going to talk about that more this time. That's the seventh step.
Okay.
Other thoughts or comments? Well, I'll launch into our material, and again, don't hesitate to stop me if you have any questions or comments. Now, we trust our stories. They're our reality. When our stories and our behaviors don't fit, we experience disharmony. We have to change one or the other to restore harmony. Sometimes we revise our stories. Sometimes we change how we see reality. We've considered if your story doesn't allow you to do certain things. If your story is, for example, you're a procrastinator, it will disallow you from finishing early. If your story says you don't do technology well, you'll live out this assumption. And we always monitor our impact as coaches. What works and what doesn't, how to dose time and titrate our responses, how to incorporate the client's work and performance style and personality into the work, to not respond personally to the client's stuckness or resistance. In other words, we're always monitoring everything that we do to see if it's effective, to see if it helps the client move ahead. So as we guide clients to offer new experiences, at first the idea of change will create excitement. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, probably anxiety. Then, expansion. And then, finally, mastery. Now, listen for a couple of additional aspects that can appear together that can seem as a paradox. And so this is a view from a wide-angle lens. They're a developmental overview of writing a new story. First, every step forward means relinquishing a past position. Someone must mourn, must say goodbye emotionally as well as practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story. This is a process, a developmental step, not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's like saying goodbye to an old friend to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior, or even a hope that by getting the old story just right or doing it better, it will make it work. No matter how maladaptive, the old story still has to be mourned. For example, each of the hundreds of young women with bulimia I've worked with had to mourn her bulimia, the loyal companion it had become, being there when no one else was, to come to the end of her past, to successfully move on, and redefine her identity. And secondly, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. It's a narcissistic injury because this carefully crafted old story has been the very best that someone can do, but then suddenly they realize that there's a better way. It can be replaced by something better. And this old story, the way they've been doing things, is part of their identity, part of how they see themselves. So I see at least six components in this dynamic of change. They're not headlines now. You won't see a manifestation in each of these with a client, but these are just to think about, kind of as an internal conceptual marker for you as a mental coach, as a mentor coach. The myth that there's a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems. The disappointment that nothing is perfect, there's not even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. And that's one of the final steps into adulthood, is to realize you're responsible for yourself, there's no ultimate arbiter of fairness. The development, the recognition that nobody's going to take care of it for you. The growth to take the next best action. And then the consolidation, the happy, sad experience resulting. Happy about the autonomy of moving ahead, the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle, and sad about mourning an old story. To offer new experiences, sometimes you have to think outside the box. So how do you do that? What is the box? How do you think outside it? Randall Kennedy put it this way. Thinking that frees itself of reflexive obedience to familiar signal. This is one of the quotes I saw not too long ago written on the student union at Princeton on the wall. How do you know when you're in the box to get out of it, to revise your story or write another one? These questions assume the story is there, given in the universe, as if the story, the proverbial box of the familiar and accepted, is the obstacle. But it's not there until you create it or accept it. And people are always free to change their minds, their beliefs, and their core assumptions. So the box, then, is the result of programming and conditioning. It's self-created in adulthood. And boxes are not a bad thing. They don't have to be limiting. They can be defining, guiding, validating, expandable, a default mode that works really well. But listen to these different boxes to hear how very arbitrary and situational each one is, each with its own intrinsic set of beliefs, behaviors, and rules. The first, people treat a piece of processed leather as if it were sacred. They protect it, hide it, try to steal it. There are all kinds of rules about what you can and can't do with it, even who can touch it or hold it. If it crosses an arbitrary line somebody draws, it can count for different points. +2, -2, 3, sometimes 6. Football. Another. It moves in and out of your life and varies daily. You want more, but you may keep doing the same thing not to get it. Two people can do the very same thing and obtain really different quantities. You can buy it or sell it, but the price changes daily, even minute by minute. It's a stand-in for what you want, even for what you despise. And here's the lifeline clue. It's the most desired legal substance to all peoples of the world. Money. And a final one. There's no clear definition of winning. It's always at risk. There's always a price to pay. There's always another level of success. Money, your life story, your wellness story. Now, here's a footnote for those of you who are working with executives or owners to write the next chapter of their business stories. The box can be limiting or inflexible. The canal boat companies of the 1700s didn't become the railroad company of the 1800s. They stuck to their box. And in the 1900s, there were no Union Pacific Airlines. They stuck to their box. Good to gone. Motorola stuck to their story and slid from a premier electronics firm to a troubled industry. Meanwhile, Nokia asked and listened to children and young people just developing their stories and used their feedback to become world class. Good to great. So open yourself to possibilities you haven't quite imagined. Scarcity is a rigid box. Abundance is expandable. No one can grant you freedom. You have to declare it. No one gives you power. You have to generate it, claim it, and not give it away. To recognize yourself as the author, the creator of your story, challenges an assumed model and leads to the deeper question, how do I create something else instead? And what will that something else be? To simply stop doing something is not complete change. A new story means incorporating new behavior and beliefs. You have to embody, actually live your new story. To abstain from an old story, from stuckness or repetition, is a beginning. But someone has to engage a new story before an old story can be given up. A mind that accepts a new idea generates a new dimension. A brain that creates new experience alters its neurochemistry and neuronal pathways. Neuroscientists now know that the brain is sculpted by changes and experiences. The mind can change the brain. It's an inside job. So let's further consider, in terms of the step six, authoring new experiences, the AAA principles of change to author a new story. And the three A's, awareness, acceptance, and action. One, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of these storylines with the question, is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. your business career story, your relationship story, your money story. When I ask people what they most look forward to and what they're most afraid of for the next chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams, yet specific fears. The top of the list of long-term concerns, health and money. A not-so-secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you'll still have to pay in some way. An example, if you incur debt in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you simply end up paying more for it. And here's another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price. This makes it easy to pay. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. I'm doing it right now. I love this. I think each of you are going to make such a difference in so many lives. So it's not like paying. It's a privilege and a passion. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story. Positive or negative, past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Now, here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes a momentum and power of its own. Remember that you're not the subject of this process. You're the creator of it, the author of it. Here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. 3. You're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? The first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? And a goal then becomes like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, make a map, and determine the time. Now, a caveat here, to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. In fact, you may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. And history, if you think about it, and not just history, but current news is replete with people who simply did not do the next right thing. Whatever you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. You're engaging something when you're resisting it. It's not like you're ignoring it. Denial is an engagement. It's like saying anger is just as passionate an attachment as love. They're both passionate emotional attachments. An example of this principle, Paul Conrad, political cartoonist, said of Charles Coughlin, a 1940s radio preacher. I knew that anybody who had to holler that loud couldn't be right. And consider this now. Most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor, but they aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. 4. You're writing your own story. Do you have specific, measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates had fashioned a vision and specific goals for their lives in business. 5 decades later, that same 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of that entire group. That was Harvard Business. There's a similar study spanning 40 years of Dartmouth graduates, similar 92% of assets. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal? Measurement and time. Where and when? The travel agent question. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by 5 p.m. March 30th, 2014. Here's a good idea. I want to make more money. Here's a goal. I will generate $220,000 from coaching and $215,000 from products and royalties in the next 11 months. Here's one more. A good idea. I will save more for retirement. And here's a goal. I will set up an automatic deduction of $350 a month from my checking account to automatically be deposited in my retirement account. Then write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs and every August riding on the coast of Maine. Now, you guys have to substitute your own goals here. Then reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day. You wake up and when you go to bed. And I want to highlight here for each of you to review from the workbook section, the exercise, 11 steps to ignite success, beginning on page 3.13. And the three components that I think are especially important is to establish three SMART goals, the specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. And the timetable here, depending on the goals, that may be anywhere from 30 to 90 days, maybe some, maybe as much as 6 months, but establish three SMART goals. And then for each SMART goal, determine three key initiatives to take for each goal. And a timetable here might be 7 to 14 days. And then for each initiative, decide on the next best action. And the timetable for the next best action, 24 hours. So you're laddering your steps to do the next best action, next best step, and that's every 24 hours, and that's movement toward the initiative, and as soon as you reach the initiative, you set the next initiative to reach the SMART goal. So you're laddering and really structuring your success and progress that way. Five, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take for progress. For example, if you feel overwhelmed at work with the amount of tasks, identify one specific thing that you can do in the next 24 hours that will give you some traction. This focus on a simple, specific action creates a sense of effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Since he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed to average 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. Immediately after the race, he was interviewed and was asked, how did he manage to keep himself going when he was tired, knew he still had thousands of miles ahead? His response, I just kept going to the next telephone pole. So, divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a really puzzling picture on his wall. It was a photograph in which everything just seemed curiously out of focus. As I met with him each week, I glanced at the photograph, and finally, toward the end of the year, I asked him about it. He said, look carefully, Dave, what do you see? Well, I walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography didn't help at all. I said, Steve, the only thing I notice is that there's one branch of one tree in focus in the entire picture. He nodded. He said, that's why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you can have in focus and see clearly, which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. Remember the NASA astronauts. It takes for simple behavior and response at least 25 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent. So write a new story consistently for it to become the default mode. The difference between a genius idea and a true story of success, Malcolm Gladwell tells us in Outliers, is about 10,000 hours. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this is all really simple. Good parents have known this for centuries, but sometimes it takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. We can foster change and conscious practices. We can foster change by conscious practices and effective tools. An infinite sea of new patterns and possibilities can be created to further new goals. The caveat, we have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses to write new script for new experiences, which is to say, once again, the new story has to replace the old one. And there are no shortcuts, since long-term changes require consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change and ensure transformation, which is exactly what we're studying now, the mind, brain, and behavior changes that last. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. To your spouse or partner, ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? Then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest and explicit feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he is important to the village life. This may have been an original 360-degree feedback. Now, even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our true essence. So, find people who are already successfully doing what you want, getting what you want. Research what they do in order to do your version of it. Make it your story. Ask, learn, question, but be sure it's your story. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was
Sounds
Albert
like
Einstein.
An Einstein.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And here's an interesting statistic. After giving a complete presentation about the benefits of their service or product, more than 60% of the time, seasoned salespeople forgot to ask for the order. How to ask is a crucial factor. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely, appreciatively. Virginia Satir, the well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve the client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. they said two things. This is the most amazing report. And how did you come up with all these brilliant ideas? She said, well, I just asked all the social workers in your department what it would take for the system to work better. Now, you may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, the remainder of the roadmap. The 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance instead of waiting for good luck. Luck is defined as probability taken personally, or my favorite, narcissism meets chance. A review of research on goal setting. Now, this is in your workbook, so I'm not going to repeat it here. But research on goal setting helps us understand two essential components. The research was why people give up on goals and how effective goal setting can help ensure long-term achievement. Marshall Goldsmith headed this. He's really one of the, if not the originator of executive coaching in this country. And he found six most important people reasons that people give up on goals. And the inverse then, in recognizing this and addressing it, the inverse is success insurance. So look at those when you have a chance to go over them. The first is ownership. People have to buy in. And then to look at strategically planning the remainder of those. And just take a look at those when you have time. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have, could I get a management of background noise because I hear some paper rustling and sort of thing. Just mute until you're ready to talk. And again, I welcome any comments or questions or additions. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still don't. So what do you got to lose? What's the problem? You've spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was dissuaded. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 simple questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? He added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500, and in his first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. So don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beon was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? He said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day. I got these boots and this baseball cap. So when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, but nobody told Cliff this. And the first night, when the others were sleeping, and he shuffled by them, they were asleep, so they couldn't tell him. So he shuffled along for days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And finally, 12, You're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. For tens of thousands of years before books and computers, we transmitted our essence and principles by story. Story linked to the past, organized the present, and illuminated the future. Story allowed us to connect with each other's humanity in the paths crossed on the long journeys out of Africa to populate the rest of the world. Then the anatomy and physiology of our brains grew by putting thoughts and feelings into stories. Stories informed, instructed, inspired, governed, organized. Story is the most powerful way humans communicate. Story gives birth to possibilities. Stories are a way that we resonate with our earlier selves, connect with others, and create a roadmap to proceed. Your story is yourself, your life, and what will survive you. At some point in the distant future, all that will be left of you, all that will survive you, is your story. Be sure and get it right. Now, I want to pause before we move into step 7 to program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. See if there are comments or questions or things that you'd like to discuss at this point. Anyone? Okay, if not, I'll move into step 7, and again, don't hesitate to interrupt.
Dave, I have a question.
Yes.
And, you know, I agree with it, yet part of it is when you're writing your story, it's almost, you know, when you make a step, then things change, et cetera. So it's almost like how far do you go? You know, like back to the detail or back to being specific. You know, it's sort of like writing a book. You have to say, well, I'm going to write the next chapter, you know, and I'm going to give myself a month or, you know, whatever. So there's a lot of repetition with writing your own story, but what happens very often is when you take two steps, so much changes that you have to allow that to happen. So that's where the affirmation of making your writing your own story. You can get to the end goal or where you think you'd like to be, but often other things are changing simultaneously. So is it, you know, is it time managed or, you know, I mean, that's where I'm getting a little bit lost because, yes, I can appreciate that you're writing it, but how can you write it when you're making certain changes, but they take a while. You know, if it takes 30 days to consistently create a new brain pattern in one aspect, simultaneously many things very often are changing at the same time that you're letting go of. It's not just one thing, you know? So I just,
absolutely.
So that's where, yes, conceptually I agree with you, but having it time phased or being more specific to me would be helpful.
When you say time phase, I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, okay, is it the next 3 months, the next 6 months, the next, not, you know, I mean, yes, you know, do you want to write your story for, you know, the next 10 years or to the end of your life, or do you know what I'm saying? It's, to me, it's a little vague.
You say how far in advance do you say, okay, I'm going to write my story that's going to be out for the next 5 years?
Okay.
Is that the time you're asking about? I've kind of got the same question.
Is
okay.
What has to be the most effective time frame for, you know, creating, you know, whether it's the next chapter of your story, you know, that's what, to me, those kind of specifics are useful.
Okay.
Well,
let's look at that specifically, and I think I understand your question. One way of thinking about it is that all we can do is make a choice at this moment. We can determine whatever we think and feel and experience at this moment. Now,
mm-hmm.
That means we are each moment creating our story. So it's something that we are actively doing. The more that we're consciously aware, the more it fits into overarching goals and plans and strategies, the more effective we'll be. Now, there are some strategies, and well, there are various phases. I mean, think about this is analogous to the different coatings on seeds. Why are there always plants, even when you don't see, you know, for 7 years or nothing? They all have different coatings. They're set to germinate at different times, some within 2 or 3 weeks, some 2 or 3 years, some 7 years, the longest bamboo at 48 years. So there's always something that's time to germinate. So that's, you know, some of your goals will be long-term goals. Some of your goals may be what you're going to do by 7 o'clock this evening and the remainder of the week. So I think you have different perspectives in the system of writing. If you think about writing your story, is a system. It's not linear, and I think you're trying to make it linear and get confused because it's not linear. It's a system, and every time you change one element of a system, the entire system changes. So when you look at this system of interrelated aspects, there are many interrelated interpersonal internal aspects as well as interpersonal. So you're affecting yourself and many around you as well. So all you can do is have your ideals and needs aligned and align those with needs and goals and do the best job possible of making it organic. And you're going to revise your goals as you move forward. And it's a very organic process. Doesn't mean you don't have goals, but that you take into account what works and what doesn't. Is this what you want to do? You take in new information, and you get new information every day. But you have a course that you stay, a plan, and you see if it's working to get you where you want to go. And then constantly you're revising it. So it's not about doing it right or about doing it within a time period, but looking at what's working and are you getting to where you want to go. And there are things right now that neither of us could predict that you'll be doing a year from now that may be related but yet still novel for what you've even considered right now as you move ahead. Does that begin even to address your question?
Yes, it does. It does, yes. I think, though, sometimes people initiate more change because of one aspect that really needs to be addressed, yet sometimes there's lots of change that's going on, transitions, that you don't really have any control over. So sometimes many moving parts are a lot to... they're like a handle because when you're moving ahead, sometimes things are also, you know, letting go. You know, you're moving.
Every step ahead is letting go of something from the past. And as you just said, a very important distinction is determining what you can be effective in doing and what you can't, and to really honestly assess that so that you can put your energy into what you can effectively do and let go or avoid what you can't. And that's a constant and ongoing assessment. I mean, there's some broad categories that you can automatically know that you can't determine how somebody else is going to respond. But there are some things that are very subtle in this whole system moving forward.
Yes.
But the principles are the ones that I'm wanting and hoping to establish that will help us understand this process and then how to apply it. Principles that operate help us understand how our minds and brains and behavior can work and can affect changes that last. And Chris, you said you had the same question. Does this even begin to address your aspect of the question?
Yeah, it actually did. When you made the comment that this is not a linear process, that resonated with me. That clicked and made sense because I think I was trying to put this more into a linear process.
Uh-huh.
It's not. It just
yeah.
That helped a lot.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, let me look with you at step seven, and then we'll hopefully have some time at the end. Now,
could I just add something real quick?
Yes.
Is the are the 11 steps to ignite success something that would be appropriate and helpful in this particular situation to answer Diane's question?
To answer Diane's question, I heard it a little bit different. Diane, did these 11, is that the AAA principles, do they, as you reflect on it, do they help you in any way to answer this question, or are they alongside that?
Yes, I think they do. I think it's part of it, but the basis, and maybe Chris, sometimes it's the way some of us think we need to put things in a, almost like on a calendar. That's just kind of how our brains are programmed to work.
Uh-huh.
And so some of that is resistance, perhaps, to the steps, because for some of us, I mean, just even personally, there's so much transition that goes on. It's almost like you want to kind of pin the tail on the donkey. You know, you just want to put it somewhere so it seems as if it's really all working in many ways. So, yes, I think it is, but it's an awful lot to take in for each transition, you know. Or
well, that's true, and that's why shrinking the change and looking at it in a stepwise way, making change measurable and tangible and specific can be very useful. And here's something that I have said at times to certain clients, and it's both validating and illuminating, that I think you can always distinguish between dosing and timing and titrating of the change or evolution you're making from procrastination. And that's an important distinction, to look at dosing and timing and titrating, which is really important, to do things in a stepwise way, in your own system, in your own way, that your timetable is not in comparison to anybody else's. It's your story, and you're evolving it, and it's not in comparison or competition with anybody else. But within that, you'll know the difference between moving ahead in your own way, dosed and timed, to be optimum for you, from putting things off or avoiding or procrastinating. And that's a really mm-hmm. important distinction, I think.
Yes, I think you're correct. And I also believe that the majority of people, I know myself, I get questioned on a lot of things because it's all based on what they see as what would be change. It's very external.
For them or for you?
For them. They're always questioning, for instance, me, based on how they measure their own success. Or, you know, so some of that, I think, is important to understand, because as we do evolve and change, you're correct, it's a linear process, and the dosing of it and the timing of it, it is personal. I don't think it's, for some people, it might appear as procrastination, but that is how the majority of people think. They have about four different areas that they might ask you about, like those boxes, but yet when you ask them something similar, they have really nothing that they're doing differently.
Okay.
You know, it's the same old thing. So it's how the world sees it. And you're very correct in the fact that 90% of what happens to most people, you know, is what they just allow to happen and how they absorb the world. So when you do make change, yes, I think it, you know, it may not be apparent to the boxes that they have, but for yourself, when you really do use the 11 steps and you get somewhere, more subtle, but I think it's more long-term and more satisfying because it's a whole process that you've really entrusted and you're working on.
Okay. Okay,
so, yes,
thank you. And I'm going to move into our step seven so that we can at least highlight some things. And I want to just give you an overview of what you'll see in the curriculum. And remember the thing that we said most importantly about step seven is that we're doing this consistently throughout our work with the client. It's not like the last step, but this is something that we're doing all the time with the client, is helping them evolve the model of how they see they're operating, how and who they see themselves to be as they're undergoing change and creating a new story, that we're highlighting this and enhancing this, illuminating this as part of their experience of we're validating their movement and their evolution of a model. And remember how important this is. The most powerful force of the human psyche is that we always return to our identity. And if someone makes a change or has a different piece of behavior and doesn't change their identity, they'll revert back to where they were before. So this is why it's so important. And that's why this step of programming new identity to incorporate and sustain changes is really so vital, because this will make a difference about whether change lasts or not. So just a couple of things to highlight about this. There's some material in the curriculum about a mission statement. And you know, from business, a mission statement is a statement of an organization's primary purpose, their strategies to achieve that purpose, and its fundamental values. Now, a personal mission statement can clarify and provide meaning to your daily activities. It can add focus and commitment to what you're doing. So a mission statement, a personal mission statement, contains four elements: ideals, purpose, strategy, goals. And you know what each of these are. So I would suggest that you create a personal mission statement. What is your life purpose? What are you meant to do? This is the compass to guide your life story to personal fulfillment. I'll share mine. To inspire and guide others to achieve their unique, most empowered life and business stories. Work on yours, write it down, read it every day. Now, one aspect I want to revisit here is about following success trails. If you've heard a client say something like, I want to change careers, but I don't know what I'd do instead, or I really want to get in shape, but I don't know where to start, I want to play a bigger game, but I'm not quite sure what it is, decide how you want to expand. Then pick success trails to follow. Seek out a mentor, books, program, or resources to help you. Watch someone who's doing what you might want to do. Ask if you can take them to lunch and pick their brain, or shadow them for a day to observe. When my good buddy, Art Wilson, who I do the What's Next Exec retreats with now, heard that I had transitioned and completed my training and certification for coaching from psychoanalytic practice, he flew to Houston to take me to dinner. A few years earlier, he left IBM at a very early retirement. As a senior executive, he was a lead salesperson in the country of 10,000 salespeople to start his own corporation, a consulting firm. He told me how he chose five very successful people and asked them to lunch or dinner to pick their brains about what he was about to do. It was something similar to what he was about to do that he picked their brains. And he advised me to do the same. And it worked for both of us. Some business people with instant global recognition pick his brain for some substantial picking fees. So you might consider creating a support team or an advisory board. Look at network groups. Gauge a mentor. Join a mastermind group. Now, something that I just want to highlight here, I'm not going to go into it, but remember we talked about a vision as a way to rewire a brain. This is one way to create change that lasts, to gauge new identity, is to create a vision and then find a way to back into it, strategically to back into it. Affirmations are the story that support the visualization. And there's a chapter that goes into some detail all the current scientific kind of the art and science of visualization and of affirmations in that book. It's an e-book called Outsmart Your Brain, an Instruction Manual. And the chapter is the old art and new science of visualization. And it contains an approach, a systematic way to approach visualization and affirmation. And it's in there, and it's kind of the best practices combined. So I'm not going to reiterate that, but I'll send that to you as soon as I do a revision on it, which should be in the very soon, actually.
So you said you send this to us.
Yeah, actually, I can send the chapter on visualization separately. Let me go ahead and do that now. I'll make a note to that. I can send you that chapter because it's been revised. I just don't have the whole thing right, but that shouldn't close down. I'll send that to you.
Is it two separate chapters, visualization and affirmation?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll send you that chapter as an attachment. Okay. I'll send it either tonight or in the morning before I take off. So I'll get that to you. So basically, when you program your system with a visualized goal, create structural tension in your brain, cognitive dissonance, the difference between where you are and where you visualize and affirm. Your brain then strives to end this tension by actualizing the goal. And again, affirmations provide the story to support your vision. So this structural tension, this dissonance, will give you creative ideas, help you see things you haven't seen before, like a perceptual shift, and provide motivation to take action. Of course, remember, the universe rewards action. So how long do you do this? Until the goal is realized. How many goals should you generate affirmations for? Well, a reasonable amount, probably three, that you may be working on at any one time. In this way, you create the feeling of internal success. You inhabit the experience. An affirmation will initially make you feel uncomfortable and even anxious, possibly because it's looking at new material, looking at being in new territory. With an affirmation that's positive and not yet achieved, you're challenging the core belief of your identity, of who you are. You are each alchemist. Alchemists are people who believe in potential, in transformative power. And remember the most important lesson from anything I've said during our time together today. Just keep going to the next telephone pole. So, we don't have as much time as I hope. Questions, thoughts, things that you'd like us to discuss? Or that you'd like.
Hi, it's Lynn here, just checking in.
Welcome. Hey.
How are you?
Great to have you.
Yeah, it's good. I missed lots of pieces to it, but I'll listen to it. Once
yeah, and you will hear the reminder that we won't meet next week. That we
yes, I got that.
November 20th, and think about as you listen to it when you'd like to volunteer for the roadmap, the brief presentation, and you can let me know at any point. There's no rush for that.
Awesome.
So great thoughts, questions.
This was good. Very helpful.
Well, good. Do you feel now that we've gone through all the seven steps that you have kind of a sense of how to understand or listen to and understand how someone's constructing a story?
For me, I've got definitely a better understanding of it.
Okay.
I personally like the idea of being present and just being in the moment. And getting rid of my thinking and maybe a bit of judgment for the other who's in front of me in helping them and just being with them in that moment to see that what's possible for them.
I think that's a really crucial aspect to really be very present very centered so that you have full access to all of your states of mind, all your software programs, and thus all the information that you have, and can do that in a very balanced way. We're going to talk about how to do that on both sides, the coaches and the client side, as we look at states of mind. So, yeah, I totally agree. Well, thank you all very much. I look forward to picking up with you in 2 weeks. Have a great rest of the week, and look forward to a couple of weeks. Thanks a lot.
Bye. Thank you very much.
Good night. See you.
Bye.
Thanks, Dave.